You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement here on AmericaOutloud.com. I am your host, Randy Sutton, a 34-year police veteran and the author of A Cop's Life. There's a lot to talk about, but before we get into the briefing room, I want to talk about the Wounded Blue. The Wounded Blue is the National Assistance and Support Organization for Injured and Disabled Law Enforcement Officers. I'm the founder of that organization. I would ask you to help these men and women who have made a terrible sacrifice with their disabling injuries and serious injuries. Many of these men and women are not given the proper medical attention, and they're certainly not given the care that they need when it comes down to their emotional support. That's why we exist, to be peer support for those men and women. Check out thewoundedblue.org, and if you have not seen our documentary film, it's called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed, go to Amazon.com or go to iTunes or the Microsoft Store or any place else that you can download videos, and I urge you to see this documentary. You'll be shocked. Check it out and support The Wounded Blue. Now let's take a walk in the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. Law enforcement has been in the news in so many dramatic ways over the last week. Let's talk about one of the most highly publicized incidents, and I want to break it down for you. Let's talk about what happened in Odessa and Midland, Texas, just a day or so ago. An individual had been fired from his job as a truck driver. Unbeknownst to the troopers who were going to make a traffic stop on him, he had been terminated. They didn't know who he was, but they saw a vehicle that made a very minor traffic violation. And these Texas Department of Public Safety troopers went to make a car stop. Now, we in the law enforcement profession know that there is no such thing as a, quote, routine traffic stop, unquote. The media has used this term frequently, even describing this particular event. And what was about to unfold revealed exactly why there is no such thing as a routine traffic stop. As the troopers turned on their overhead lights to stop the vehicle, the suspect was armed with a long rifle. And even before he got stopped, he opened fire on the troopers. One of the troopers was seriously injured in the shooting. Suspect took off. The police were in pursuit. This madman used this time period before he was stopped. In the next 20 or 30 minutes, he randomly shot at people that just happened to be in his path, killing 7, injuring more than 20 in one of the first mobile mass shootings in memory. He killed, he shot, he was on a rampage. Police were trying to stop him. At one point, he got out of his vehicle, I don't know whether it became disabled, and hijacked a U.S. Postal vehicle, killing the driver of that. He then drove to a crowded shopping center where there was a movie theater. Had he gotten into that movie theater or into that heavily congested area, God knows how many more people he would have killed. But a Midland, Texas, and Odessa police officer, two of them, went above and beyond when they put their own lives in jeopardy, knowing this guy was armed with a long gun, smashed their vehicles into his, stopping his vehicle. But he then shot those officers. Those officers, however, were more warrior than he thought. And despite the shootings that were taking place, the police officers returned fire and killed the suspect, bringing to an end a reign of terror that is one more in a series of mass shootings. I bring this up for a couple reasons. One is to show how dangerous the law enforcement job truly is, where any interaction, something as simple as a minor traffic violation, can quite literally lead to anything. And why is that important? Why do I bring that up? Because probably the most common police interaction with a citizen is on a traffic stop. Thousands and thousands of them are made every single day. But every time one of those officers activates his overhead lights to pull you over or pull someone over in your family, they do not know the individual who they're trying to stop. They don't know if it is John Q. Citizen on his way to work or if it's a madman with a gun, just like happened days ago. And I say that because police are often criticized about their methodology during traffic stops. People complain. I know as a police lieutenant, I received many complaints over my years from people complaining about the officer's quote attitude, unquote, that when he walked up, he on the car, he had his hand near his gun. The occupants felt threatened. And I understand that, but this is the reality of policing, that you have to be able and willing, as a law enforcement officer, to go from officer friendly to be willing to engage in a deadly force incident. That's a very difficult concept for most people to understand. And that's understandable as well, because that's the world of policing isn't the world of the citizen. And in law enforcement, I don't think we do a good enough job in explaining to the public the reasons that we act the way that we do. So that's one of the reasons why we have this particular radio show, Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Because I kind of feel that my role is that of a translator, translating why the police do the things that they do to a public that really doesn't have an understanding because it is not their reality. So I try to communicate that. I do that on all my, when I do commentary on Fox or HLN or CBS or any of the other times that I'm called upon to act as an expert commentator on law enforcement issues. Because there is such a huge amount of misinformation out there. Well, the heroism shown by these officers in this incident, you know, the brutality of this suspect, one of the people that he shot was a 17-month-old. I mean, what kind of animal, what kind of punk is willing to arbitrarily destroy lives? The motive has not been reached yet. I don't know that a motive really even matters at this point, does it? The fact of the matter is that an individual who had only a minor arrest record, by the way, according to some sources in law enforcement, he should not have legally been able to obtain a firearm. So I think that investigation is still going on. How did he obtain it? This is one of the arguments that is, you know, so heated today is about methodologies to try and keep weapons out of the hands of people that have, you know, clearly not just criminal intentions, but are, you know, affected by mental disorders. And, you know, I guess, can anybody not have a mental disorder that kills arbitrarily? I mean, when you look at it, you got to be a sick, sick individual. Now, how many more of these ticking time bombs are floating around among us? Here's something you didn't hear in the news. And I was actually combing the newspapers trying to find out about it. This came to me by way of a law enforcement source. Now, this also occurred in Texas just a day after this horrendous mass shooting. But an individual walked into a church during Sunday services and physically attacked the parishioners. Now, he was not armed, but he was clearly under the influence of either drugs or alcohol or both. He physically attacked these parishioners. There were two off-duty law enforcement officers in the congregation. Both engaged the suspect, attempted to take him physically, as did several others in the congregation. And during the fight, the suspect kicked a parishioner, killing him. I don't know why this didn't make the news, maybe because of all the other insanity. I mean, after all, it was only one person dead, right? Not multiple. But the officers who engaged this subject show once again the bravery, the dedication that these officers have, even though they're off duty, to jump in when the threat is there. The bravery shown by law enforcement officers around the country is, I think, something that is not demonstrated in the media enough. You know, you don't hear the stories very often. And the violence being directed towards law enforcement officers now is something I don't think I've ever seen. I'm going to talk to you about some of the events that took place just in the last few days. Okay, we have the one that I just spoke about, the one in Odessa and Midland, where three officers were shot. Then in New York, this headline, and this just occurred just minutes ago. Masked gunman opens fire on officers sitting in car. Now, this masked gunman was fatally shot by police after he opened fire on an occupied patrol car and sparked two separate shootouts with officers. Happened at 2:30 a.m. on Monday, after uniformed New York police officers out on patrol spotted a man wearing a mask. And when they attempted to speak, he immediately fled. He opened fire on them. He then tried to get into a house, engaged officers in gunfire again, and was eventually killed by police. No motive. Guy walking the streets at 2:30 in the morning wearing a mask, targeting police. That's one. Then another one. Just days before that, three suspects are facing multiple charges for shooting at a Kansas City officer with handguns and a high-powered rifle. The incident began shortly after 9:30 p.m. after an officer spotted a red car in an abandoned lot. When the officer shined his spotlight on the suspicious vehicle, the driver sped away. The driver is later identified as a 25-year-old. There were two other people, two 18-year-olds in the car. When the officer attempted to make a car stop, they immediately opened fire on him. And this officer, once again showing the incredible bravery, facing intense gunfire from three different weapons, continued to pursue the suspect. And the officer, once again, showing an incredible, not only bravery, but skill level, conducted a pit maneuver, a pursuit intervention technique. That means where you actually use your vehicle to force the suspect vehicle to spin out. And the only way to do that is to get close enough to touch his vehicle with yours. Think of this. These people were shooting at him, and he had the guts and the skill level to ram their car with his in a controlled manner. And they were able to take these suspects into custody without even shooting them. So this is another. What do you wonder why people feel like they are empowered enough to open fire on police? Now, back to New York City, just days before this. Three NYPD officers were injured in an incident that resulted when police tried to break up a group. Three NYPD cops injured in melee as residents fired guns from rooftops. There was this is early morning hours, and there was a loud and boisterous group. The police went in to simply ask them to leave, and suddenly the crowd turned on them, throwing bottles and debris. Other items were thrown from the rooftops, and then they started taking gunfire. Numerous shots. Now, there were three officers who were injured in this. New York. Now, what's the correlation here? We're seeing all these New York incidents. What? Why? Why is suddenly New York the focal point of all of these assaults on police? Do you think it might have something to do with the news coming out that the police commissioner from the city of New York turned on their own police officer, Officer Dan Pantaleone, and fired him in the Eric Garner case, even though there was no evidence that he did anything illegal or anything wrong? You think that it might have something to do with it? Because the reality is that the morale in the NYPD is in the sewer. Officers are making many fewer arrests. They're getting involved less. Why? Because they are scared to death of their own mayor and police administration. And so what are we seeing? We're seeing officers backing down, and then we're seeing the criminal element being empowered, shooting at them arbitrarily, attacking them. There was another incident which was a viral video that came out last week. Officers had made an arrest, had to get physical with a suspect, simply trying to put him in the car. Well, he refused, and he's doing everything he can, even though he's handcuffed behind him, and the officers are trying to use the least amount of force to get him to just get in a stupid car. And a crowd gathers, and these officers literally were trying to reason with him and, quote, de-escalate, unquote. Well, you know what? De-escalation doesn't always work. You have to use force. And the police are scared to death to use the force that is necessary. And what's happening as a result? More and more emboldened criminals. More and more people willing to take on the police. I call it the culture of confrontation. And we're seeing more and more episodes of this, not just in New York, not just in major cities, but across the United States. In fact, there was another headline that just came out from all the way from San Jose. This is within the same time frame as these other incidents. Riotous crowd assaults San Jose police, injuring three. Three San Jose police officers were injured. Several arrests were made while police were clearing out a large crowd gathered downtown. The melee occurred shortly before 2 a.m. when officers were issuing citations for drinking alcohol in a parking lot. A large crowd approached the officers and aggressively interfered with their investigation. Backup officers arrived and were assaulted by the crowd as they attempted to clear out the lot. One suspect was seen running while holding a gun. Chased him down, and they found the gun, took him into custody. And while they were arresting him, another suspect tried to get him away from the police. More than 60 officers were required to handle this incident. Another incident where a crowd became emboldened. we're seeing this on an ever increasing basis. Police officers being injured continually, shootings of officers taking place literally almost every single day. And we're not seeing this addressed by politicians at all. In fact, just the opposite. All you hear from politicians is the false narrative about the police being heavy-handed, the police being racist, the police being the problem. It isn't the police being a problem. It is a certain element in society now feeling emboldened because of the politics and because of the social atmosphere that is taking place. As a result, every one of us in America is becoming more and more at risk of becoming a victim. You see, the statistic is alarming that there's been a drop of 60% of people even trying to join the police departments of this nation. This is a crisis. If you think it's not, please think again. Because as officers leave, even before their retirement age, or they leave as soon as they are eligible to retire, and we don't have an environment that is conducive to people joining, you have less and less people. That means a lower field of applicants. That means a standard being diminished in order to hire people. And then some politicians even going further and demanding that the only people that can apply for their police departments are those that live in the particular jurisdictions, thereby eliminating an entire field of applicants. It's madness. And yet, this is what is happening across the country. Watching this is so frustrating for me. Because as an individual that served with law enforcement for almost 34 years, it is heartbreaking to watch a system being destroyed and dismantled by politicians, by social media activists who have an incredible amount of empowerment on this topic. Even district attorneys turning their back on the people that they were elected by and failing to even prosecute. Do you think that plays a role in the number of assaults on police? You can guarantee it. Well, one of the things that I wanted to point out, though, is this headline. Pay raise credited for big spikes in Atlanta Police Department recruitment and retention. The decision to boost salaries followed a compensation study that found Atlanta officers were paid well below the median rates of their law enforcement peers. So, in other words, the Atlanta Police Department is hundreds below their required strength. And experienced officers were leaving at an incredible rate, much faster than anybody could be hired, because they were paid so poorly. They went to other jurisdictions. So I don't know why this should be rocket science. No kidding, really? You mean if you pay your people better and you give them better benefits, they're more likely to stay? No kidding. And this is something that is happening all across America. And leadership of cities just aren't getting it. Treat your police right. Pay them a living wage. Give them decent benefits. Treat them like human beings. And you know what? They might just stay. But it goes beyond that. This goes into leadership. This goes into inspired and ethical leadership as well. Making sure that these law enforcement leaders have the guts, have the courage to stand up for their men. I'm not saying cover up anything, of course not. But the vast majority of the law enforcement activities that take place are well within the range of normalcy and within policy and the right thing to do. But so many law enforcement leaders are failing to stand up under the political pressure. This is all part and parcel of the crisis in America policing today. So Atlanta, good job. Took you a while to figure it out, but finally you did. Maybe some other cities in America will follow their lead. I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is when you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, you know, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed. Everything else that you need a deodorizer for, this stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras, gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You got to check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. And register with them, contact them. Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you want to go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you want to contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a California businessman who has a desire to help protect American law enforcement officers, probably because he has a little personal relationship with some. He's with me today. His name is John Tompkins. He is the founder, or co-founder, I should say, along with his wife, of E614. Protecting those who serve. John, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thanks for having us, Randy. We sure appreciate it.
No, it's my pleasure. So let's talk about a little bit about your background. You are the owner of a successful business in California. That's SoCal Fab and Supply. But that wasn't enough for you. You wanted to do some more. Tell us a little bit about your history and what it was that inspired you to create a nonprofit to help protect police.
Well, we spoke a little bit about it. You just mentioned that both the boys are deputy sheriffs. One was my son was a Las Vegas Metro for about 11 years, and Jane's son's Orange County deputy sheriff for I think some 15 years now. After the Cece's Pizza murders of Soldo and Beck, we just kind of gnashed our teeth about, really couldn't stop that. But what can we do to help our boys and their friends, which well, John, turned into...
Hold on just 1 second. Not everybody that's listening to this knows about what happened to CC's Pizza. So I think you need to recount that and why that affected you so.
Well, two of the Las Vegas officers, were, as some of you know, were just basically murdered while they were eating lunch by two spineless folks who just thought it was their job to go out and murder officers. And it because it was certainly my son's department, and you know he knew the officers and the effect it had on him and many of his friends, just kind of hit close to home, really. And we just couldn't figure out what to do other than just be mad about what's going on in the world and in the law enforcement world, and kind of zeroed in on what we can do basically without offering up, you know, guns and bullets, et cetera, just something to protect the officers. And of course, C614 was born from that soon thereafter, about a year and a half after that.
So tell us exactly what E614 is.
So we're a nonprofit 501c3 that was designed around basically taking every donation that we can garner, turning it into rifle resistant plates and carriers, and basically putting those out on every sworn officer in the U.S. that requests on a first come first basis. It's based on E614 is on the Bible verse Ephesians 6:1-4, the breastplate of armor, and basically that's all we do. If we can ever get everyone served and get our 4,400 some odd guns that are on the waiting list, we've served about 810 now in 2 years. And if we can get that list taken care of, we'll start doing ballistic helmets and Kevlar, et cetera. We've run into quite a few guys through our conversations that are honestly sharing Kevlar shift to shift because their department can't even afford a Kevlar vest, if that's even possible in the U.S.
You just said something that's really poignant. It's almost unfathomable that with all of the violence that law enforcement has faced over the years, that there are still police agencies that do not provide their officers with body armor. In fact, there are some police agencies that force the officers to share body armor, which is just, it's mind-boggling. So, but you know, I think we need to explain to the listeners that there is a difference in body armor. Would you go ahead and explain why this is such a critical need?
Correct. As you and I discussed a couple days ago, Kevlar is good for, you know, the standard pistol style round, moving at a pretty low velocity, but it does pretty much zero for any fast moving rifle round. And for high risk situations, you know, active shooter situations, which a lot of you officers all know all too well about, it does zero for rifle rounds. And this level 3 steel, it's steel, it's heavy, it weighs in at about 11 pounds for the set all in, but it does do a good job of stopping, you know, rifle rounds under 4,000 feet a second. We actually talked to one of the detectives at the Dallas shooting, and she told us point blank, if two of the police officers would have had these on when they responded, they would still be here with us today. So that's kind of how important it is. It's something you would carry in your car, and you know, certainly it's not going to be on every day and all day, but it sure would help in the situations to take an extra 10 seconds and drop it on and have a better chance.
You know, body armor itself is very uncomfortable. Even the lightweight body armor that is out there in the market, and cops are wearing every day. So it's not a comfortable, you know, it's not a comfortable thing to wear. But when you're talking about a vest that is rifle resistant, would be pretty much impossible to wear, you know, as far as ongoing, you know, every day. But as you said, to have this accessible to an officer is literally a life-saving item. So, you know, why do you think that police agencies don't even issue this to their officers as a matter of course?
I'm not sure, but we've had some interaction with several agencies, local and a little bit out of our purview, and quite a few of the command staff are pretty surprised that some of this stuff exists, and what would you do with it, and how do we get it, and how much does it cost? And it's sort of frightening that there isn't a higher awareness of this, and quite honestly, we talk about it all the time. If basically advertising this, call it what you want, shames the departments into, oh boy, we'd better buy this for our guys and gals, that's okay too. I'm not sure why it's not in every car for every guy in their bag, but our goal is to try and get the awareness and everybody that requests. I mean, we're only talking to the retail purchase. It's about $325. We've gotten in with Tactical Scorpion back east, and they're giving it to us for their costs, and we're all in shipping and purchases at about $137. So we feel like we can get a lot of good work done with, you know, a reasonable amount of money.
So who's the manufacturer again?
It's Tactical Scorpion. They're wonderful folks. They basically buy in, and they just help us any way we can.
Well, that, you know, that's something that is really, I think, important to mention, because here is a company that is in business to, you know, it's a for-profit company, and yet they are willing to give you these life-saving pieces of equipment at just cost?
That's exactly what it is. We formed a relationship with them, tried a few over the first year, and settled in on this company. They just really stand behind, right down to they give us some armor to raffle off to raise funds to buy more armor. So not only are they giving it to us at their cost, but they're giving us armor at their cost to raffle off to raise money, et cetera, et cetera.
I think that sounds like you got a hell of a partnership there. So how many police officers and sheriff's officers have you outfitted with vests?
810.
Well, that's 810 potential lives that you're saving. That's to be well commended. So, you know, one of the things that I'm curious about is, you're running this basically, you have a full-time job. You're a business guy. So
yeah, I only work half days, 12 hours.
12 hours, okay. And how do you find time to run an organization like this as well?
Well, the fun part, and we all try and be extremely humble about this, because it's really an honor to help everyone we've helped and who we can. But we've got, of course, my wife and I, Jane, we do quite a bit. She does the books. I do a lot of the reaching out. Both our daughters, Jessica and Molly, do all the packaging and a good deal of the social media and just a lot of advertising, so to speak. Our accountant for the business donates all his time. Our bank VP donates all her time to help us. Our lawyer, both personal and business, he donated all of the tax papers, and he keeps us you know, squared away. So everybody donates 100%. And I'm glad you asked that, because I really feel like one of the important things to make sure everybody knows that when they donate $100, $100 goes to an officer somewhere, not 99, not 99.9. We don't have what we spend is through the business. It's our part of, you know, pulling on the same end of the rope as you guys. And it just, you know, it's important to us. And it just, we feel like we've really been blessed with a good business, and we want to do our part, like our tagline, protecting those who serve. I mean, we're home asleep at night when everybody else who is wearing the uniform is out roaming the streets. And it's just that important to us, including our own kids.
So this is a little more than just you and your wife. Your entire family is involved in this. You've managed to recruit some other folks who are also believers. You know, there's something I want to talk about, and I think it's important to mention this. You know, there's been a tremendous amount of anti-law enforcement rhetoric. There's protests in the streets. There's you know, social media posts that are threatening, that are anti-law enforcement, that put out a narrative that everybody hates the police. It's my belief that just the opposite is true, that the vast majority of Americans support law enforcement and respect law enforcement. And I think that what you're doing is not only admirable about what, you know, your accomplishments, but I think it also illustrates that there are so many people out there in America that care about their cops. Have you found that when you talk about what you're doing, that there is a great deal of respect and admiration for what you're doing, as well as for the law enforcement community?
Well, we just get a good deal of really kind comments about it, and there's a lot of nice people that are donated. There's some ladies that their little group donates every month. It's always a very positive response. Sometimes there are some surprised folks that look at you and say, I thought they got that from their department, or I thought the cities provide that, and they're just stunned that they do not. As you well know, you get your $800 or $1,000 a year, you do what you want with it, and that doesn't go very far in any business, for your uniforms, your work, your clothes, your whatever. So yeah, we get a lot of enthusiasm. We're hoping to continue to gain enthusiasm and gain awareness and, you know, get the word out to basically the United States that this is really going on, and these guys need help. I mean, there's 4,445 guys on the waiting list that are hoping somebody comes through for them. And that's what we're trying to do.
So you've got a waiting list right now of about 4,500 police law enforcement officers.
Exactly. Yep. We had, after the Dallas shootings and one of the officers found us, we had something north of 800 requests the next 2 days from that department.
I think it shows what the need is, and what can people do to help you achieve your goals? How do my listeners who are hearing this right now, how do they get involved?
Well, look us up at e614.org, e614.org, or at e614 Corporation on Facebook. I believe it's the same on Instagram. But we talk about it once in a while, and I'm a little feistier about it than the girls in the social media. I just really believe there's something a little less than a million sworn in the United States, and they all have families and friends. And if everybody just donated a dollar that cared and the word got out, this list would go away. We'd be making the list bigger through advertisement, and we'd be taking care of a lot of guys that could use a little extra help. I mean, how many situations do you see if somebody went to do a high risk call out somewhere, and if they just dropped that on, you know, the guy in the building with the rifle, you know, they have a better chance. So, it's very close to home for all of us. You know, the sisters who have brothers on the job right now in our company, and our kids and all their friends, you get to know everybody, and it just starts becoming personal.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. So your sons who are in law enforcement, how do they feel about you taking this on?
Oh, they love it. They love it. As a matter of fact, I think you saw my oldest wore the plates and carriers in a softball tournament for every at bat to try and advertise and raise awareness. And we posted that out. And Jane's son spends a lot of time telling all the guys and trying to spread the word. They really appreciate it. They are excited about it. They work for departments that, you know, have a little more money and do, you know, are able to do a bit better. I mean, before everyone knew this, you know, you could get these extra plates and carriers. We had bought them for the boys, and kind of fast forward 2.5 years later, here we are.
You know, I think this is a good time to bring up a topic that most Americans are not aware of. And that is the incredible variation in the salaries being paid to law enforcement officers all over the country. Now, you go from literally from a couple areas in New York, like Westchester and Suffolk County and places like that, where police officers are paid extremely well. They're given great benefits. And you go to other areas, literally you can go across the border to Pennsylvania from New York, and there's officers that are making $9 an hour. I mean, one of the great tragedies that sticks with me is on this radio program, we do a segment at the end called End of Watch, where we honor those men and women who have lost their lives in the line of duty. And I had done that for a Pennsylvania officer who had like 25 years on the job and was murdered, shot to death on the porch of a house whose door he was knocking on to handle a domestic dispute. And when I did the post about him and honored his life, I was contacted by a coworker of his. And this is, we're not talking a long time ago, we're only talking about a year ago. And this officer told me that that his friend, his partner, was making $9.28 an hour at the time that he was murdered. So when you talk about having that incredible variation, you know, the cost of events like this, it is very prohibitive to a guy making $9.28 an hour. You know, what you're doing is really, you know, making a difference. But I mean, let me ask you this. Are there any strings attached to what you're doing? I mean, does somebody have to show, you know, that they only make a certain amount of money in order to qualify? Or do you, you know, you basically first come, first serve?
It's first come, first serve, zero strings. We just ask for an ID or some sort of support that you're sworn. We don't want to be sending free armor out to a knucklehead, basically, somewhere. Hey. No, there's zero strings. I just keep wanting to keep drive home how transparent our operation is. We post our financials. We post our 501c3 number. Again, every dollar goes on the back of some man or woman working the job. And that's just, it's incredibly important to us. There's a few good foundations doing what we do, but it always surprises me when I see we did $1 million and 600,000 went to body armor and 400,000 went to admin and advertising. We just take a different approach, and it's our part to do our part. And again, buck for buck, it goes out into the field.
One of the other questions that I had, have any of the vests that you have given away, have they been attributed to any officers being saved yet?
We have not gotten any feedback. One of the officers that was in a shooting not very long ago in the South, he was on our list, and he actually got shot by a pistol round point blank in the back while he was trying to clear a house. The vest saved his life. He contacted us just to tell us the story, and we have a lot of relationships that we're building with a lot of officers around the country. It's one of the fun parts of what we're doing. It's interestingly enough that his new set of plates and carriers were boxed up and were mailing out the very day that he contacted us. So that's as close to that kind of situation as we've run into. Now, we hope it never has to stop that, because we just would rather it not happen, period. But, if it saves somebody, that's going to be a good day as well.
Well, it doesn't get any more real than that, does it?
No. And this gentleman was, grateful that it was coming out. He wanted to tell the story. Really good guy. And then we had a couple of nice conversations with him. We've met a lot of friends around the country that kind of flow in and out of our conversations. And it's just been a pleasure to everybody that we've met for us.
So once again, the people can donate. It's you're a 501c3. Any donation made to you is a tax deduction, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And they can contact you at e614.org. That's e614.org. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So I urge my listeners, this is a great cause. It's a great organization. They donate 100% of the money to the officers themselves for those vests. And I want to just thank you, John, for your personal involvement in this cause, for you and your family to be caring enough about the American law enforcement officer, people who never even met, to put forth such an effort to save lives. So thanks for taking the time to be on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thanks, Randy. We really appreciate it. It's a pleasure and an honor to meet you and talk to everyone. So thank you very much.
My pleasure.
There's something very important I want you to do for me. If you've been listening to the Voice of American Law Enforcement for any time, you know that we are very dedicated to the law enforcement community here. I would like you to go to a website. It's www.thewoundedblue.org. I want you to read about how we at this organization are aiding injured and disabled law enforcement officers. If you are a law enforcement officer and you have been injured or disabled and you feel forgotten and alone, this is why we exist. We have a fully trained peer support team, all made of police officers who have been shot, stabbed, beaten, run over, screwed up. They know what you're going through, and we exist for you. You are the part of the Blue family, and you deserve to be treated with respect and dignity. Unfortunately, many police agencies and cities do not treat their officers with respect and dignity when they are injured, either physically or emotionally. So go to thewoundedblue.org. If you are a citizen and you want to help, please check out how you can join the Wounded Blue. And if you're a police officer or have been, exist for you. So check out thewoundedblue.org. Now, I would also urge you to see our film. It is on Amazon, it is on iTunes, it's the Microsoft Store, it's pretty much every platform you can imagine. It's called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. You would be shocked at how the men and women of this, you know, the law enforcement community in this country, many are being treated with such disrespect. Many people, most people, even cops, believe that if you are severely injured in the line of duty, you're going to be taken care of financially and emotionally. In many cases, that is not true. Please watch the film and help The Wounded Blue.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week here on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice, given their lives in the line of duty. I have one name to read this week. Deputy Sheriff Jeremy Voiles of the Chickasaw County Sheriff's Department in Mississippi. Deputy Sheriff Jeremy Voiles was killed in a single vehicle crash that occurred on County Road 4 near Helka on the evening of August 27, 2019. He and a state narcotics agent were conducting an investigation when their vehicle rolled over several times. He was flown to a hospital in Tupelo, where he succumbed to his injuries early the following morning. Deputy Voiles had served with the Chickasaw County Sheriff's Department for 5 years and was assigned to the North Mississippi Narcotics Unit. He had previously served as a law enforcement officer with the Mississippi Department of Transportation. He survived by his wife, two young children, and parents. Deputy Sheriff Jeremy Voiles, Chickasaw County Sheriff's Department, Mississippi. End of Watch, Wednesday, August 28, 2019. May he rest in peace. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I would urge for you to check me out on Facebook under the voice of American law enforcement. I do want to hear from you. If you have suggestions for the show, please contact me there and let me know. If you are a Twitterer, you can contact me at LT Randy Sutton. That's my Twitter account. And that's it for social media for me. Of course, that isn't true. I shouldn't say that. I guess I'm also on LinkedIn. And if you want to communicate over there, that works too. So thanks again. Make sure you check out thewoundedblue.org. And feel free to contact me if you have any suggestions or comments at my page, The Voice of American Law Enforcement, on Facebook.